You're listening to Alcoholics Alive, where recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous share their experience on how they live AA as a way of life. None of our participants get paid or speak for AA. Here are your hosts, Shank and Wayne. Well, Shank, this is our final episode with a guest for season five.
I can't believe it.
Hard to believe. I think that the traditions season with the traditions has gone well. I know that I have personally learned quite a bit and have enjoyed digging into them. If you're listening, so next week we will have a season wrap up. So it'll be episode 13 of season five, but it'll just be me and Shank doing a wrap up of the 12 traditions. So you won't want to miss that. We're excited for our guest today, though. She's a repeat guest. We've had lots of requests to bring her back. There you go. I'm losing my words there. So anyway, Susie, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for asking me back. I appreciate the opportunity. I thought it was funny that I've had a lot of requests, but you know, I mean, I need to hear that every once in a while because you hear the other stuff often. But
yes,
I'm quick, and I came to AA like everybody else, not on my best foot forward. But I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I got sober in Seattle, Washington, but I did all my drinking there as well. I came from a nice family, a nice Irish Catholic family. And I mentioned that solely that, you know, we worked hard and partied hard, and I watched my family drink alcoholically, but that had nothing to do with why I picked it up at 12. You know, I knew God. I had an idea. Maybe someday I could be an angel or a saint. I was going for that, but I never was able to access God as a child, but I just believed. So come about 12 years old, I had my first drink with a couple of very cute friends of my brothers. I blacked out immediately after three Mickey Widemouth beers, and they found me 4 hours later on the side of the schoolyard, and I had vomited on a shoe, lost another shoe. And most girls age 12 being found by their brothers drug home would either be in trouble or possibly very embarrassed. For some reason, I was neither. I couldn't wait to go be with those boys again, and especially nice. That feeling of relief that I got from myself. Finally, the stuff in between my ears was gone. I wasn't worried if I wasn't as pretty or as tall or as funny or as cute as all those other girls that I always wanted to be like. I was free. And for me, living in my skin, that's what alcohol did for me. So I started to drink. Really, I became a weekend warrior right away. And I was always the girl with the two solo cups at a kegger. If that tells you anything, I always needed more than other people. I drank for effect. And by the time I was a runaway and a teenager, my father had killed him. I was very angry at God, and I went off on a path of destruction. I ran away from my family, like I said, and I drank alcoholically. By the time I was 17, I was drinking daily. And for me, it was the desire to try not to drink like other people necessarily, but to drink without consequences really affecting me. I was always balancing consequences. And so I tried at different times to only drink on weekends, Michelob Light. That didn't work. I tried to drink with different people, and no man could keep me from a drink. I tried finding a babysitter. It didn't work. I did a lot of that kind of drinking. And, you know, finally I started using other substances to even to control my drinking. And, you know, I ended up bottomed out in a filthy, dirty trailer in North Seattle. And at that point, no consequence had ever gotten me sober. I couldn't stay stopped on my own. And I was feeling pretty sorry for myself, sitting in a pile of sleeping bags. And my current love of my life that was supposed to have married me 9 years ago hadn't yet, but he was there. And he ran out with the female dealer. And I was left alone there. And I'm so glad I had a moment. And I didn't know I had a moment with God at that moment, but I had a moment. And I believe I was surrendered to get help. And what happened is I cried out to God, "Dear God, help me." I'd seen this beautiful baby and this man and this woman standing in the nice part of the trailer park. And I saw them and I thought, I'll never have that. I'll never have a family. I'll never have anyone love me. And I said the words, "Dear God, help me." And from that stemmed everything. I had a moment with God then, and I picked up the phone and talked to an operator who probably thought I was crazy. I'm bawling, you know, uncontrollable, telling her that I'm an alcoholic and I'm going to kill myself. And I think she called someone, and that man probably saved my life. He said, if you want Doc's bed, you're going to have to come claim it. And I got up out of that place, and I took a bottle of English, Old English, and got on that bus. And needless to say, I met my sponsor that night at a detox. And that woman introduced me to a home group I was a member of for my first 7 years sober. And I met with her 3 times a week because she took me through the book. And I had this psychic change they all talked about. I began to act differently. I began to think differently. And I began to be a part of something that I'd never been a part of before. And I got free and I found out the truth about myself. And as much as I'd like to say wonderful memories, it was a very painful process. And I'm glad that I got to a point of getting free. And then, like my sponsor suggested, it's time for you to start giving back to Alcoholics Anonymous. You'll never be able to pay AA back, but you can begin to be a part of the guardianship of AA. So I got to work with a lot of people, and that's still my life today. And that's pretty much my story, Jerry and Susie.
All right. Well, thanks. All right. Thanks for that. So the boyfriend that left with the drug dealer, female drug dealer.
Yeah.
He ever come back?
No, you know what? And I thought I saw him on a bus many years later, but it wasn't. And needless to say, I believe that he unfortunately died of AIDS many years later. I was in contact with his sister. I'm still in contact with his sister to this day. And that she's still in contact. He never, unfortunately, it was a great loss for her because they were very close.
Thanks for the intro. Shank, what's the topic?
All right. Our topic today with Susie is Tradition 12. Tradition 12, the original form, the form that was written first. We've had guests explained during this entire season that the long form is the original form. So there you go. All right. Tradition 12, long form, aka the original form, says, and finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice genuine humility. This is the end, that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And so Tradition 12 short form, the form that came later on, as I have, you know, been told many times throughout this, is anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. So our first question, Susie, would be, why is it a good idea for me to place the common welfare of all AA members before individual welfare?
So, well, I think Tradition 1 and Tradition 12 kind of bookend unity. And I think that's the biggest piece of what I've learned from, you know, some of the leaders in AA in my life. They've taught me that I need to stop thinking about myself because I can't be a part of a group. I can't learn how to love other people or ever put other people before myself until I can be one of many. So I'd say something along those lines.
Okay. And the follow-up is, what would happen to me if AA as a whole disappeared? To you, so, not me.
I'd be in trouble because I need other people. I need to see God people. I need to see right action, and I need to be guided. I can't do this by myself. That's why I came to AA, because alone, my own thinking, I couldn't behave right. I still can't behave right. I still need God to behave appropriately. I need guidance, steps, traditions, principles, guidelines of what to do. I would never make it alone.
All right, Jerry, what do you think?
Well, I just realized that question says all AA members. So that means I got to place the common welfare of all AA members ahead of mine. That's a tall order. Well, my own experience is that, I mean, I got sober because another man came and talked to me. And then not long after that, I was introduced to a group. And A group is where I got sober and where I learned how to be a part of instead of a part from, and how I've kind of learned to be one among many. That should be shrapnel, probably. And we probably would keep it, but it's worth a discussion. And I know that there are exceptions to that. I mean, there are loners and there are people that don't have access to groups, or people that get sober through correspondence or just by reading book. And they're kind of exceptions. The majority of humans and alcoholics, I would say, recover by community and by group and being around people. So I think probably the main reason for it is, if we believe what the book says, we're selfish and self-centered when we get here. So everything centers around me. And it, matter of fact, the book says that's actually the root of our trouble, right? Not drinking, not alcohol, but our selfish and self-centeredness. And so I think tradition one, well, all the traditions ask us to lay aside personal ambition and selfishness, but 1 and 12 particularly tell me that, man, you got to stop being selfish if you're going to make it. And so I think that's why it's important for me to get out of myself and to think about other people, because that's not what I did when I got here. The other follow-up question that you asked, I don't know how the whole of AA would disappear. I mean, if AA just literally just disappeared, I guess we all would be in trouble. But if like our office or GSO or the conference, I mean, if all that disappeared, guess what? Us three are still going to go to the home group tomorrow night and try to help somebody. I mean, you know what? And if they quit publishing a book, we got it on a PDF. We can go get it published ourselves. People aren't going to like me saying that, but the reality is that, that if something happened to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, us as individuals are still going to meet in our communities, one on, as face to face, and try to help one another. I don't know. The book Alcoholics Anonymous says that you can be one person with the book and help whoever you want to help.
For me, this was actually brought up somewhat recent-ish, we'll say, in regards to a new publication that AA is going to be putting out this year. And it was, well, Susie, don't you think that you should, the 12th tradition and practicing genuine humility is allowing people to get sober however they're going to? And it's something that I'm still discussing with my sponsor. But it is interesting, because in my mind currently, placing the common welfare of all AA members before my personal welfare, would mean that exactly kind of what you just said, Jerry, like all you need is a big book, is the big book to get sober. And that is how I got sober. And it's not saying that people can't use other literature or anything like that, but I would think that instead of saying certain people need special literature, special pamphlets, special things because they're not as smart or good or they're different, to me, that just goes against what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. It was also within this tradition, someone said, well, the Washingtonians, and look at what happened to them. And if we didn't have our GSO office, then we would just disappear as they did. And this person was telling me, once again, it is something that I'm still kind of digging into with my sponsor currently. This person said, I used to think like you did, and I thought AA would be okay if we didn't have any of that. But since learning more and since doing more research, I realized that we probably need all of these things. And I don't really know what the quote right answer is, but I do believe, and my sponsor has made a pact with me that if AA as it stands today, if our intergroup office and GSO just shut down tomorrow, she's still going to meet with me. And we're still going to be reading the literature and we're still going to find other people to help. So.
Yeah.
I don't think, I like you guys' perspective on that question, but I that was not what I was thinking about at the time. I'm thinking more about, as an individual, how important it is for me to learn to get along with other people. And that was not something I did when I was drinking. I didn't get along well with others. And that has been what has been instrumental. Even if I have only a small group in my home and we're meeting once a week here because we can't do AA for some reason out in the world, I still need the skills and the ability and the love and the right conduct to, I need to be around others. Alone, I'm not good. And that's what I was probably getting at most. And that's about it.
All right. Yes. Well, I totally agree. Here's the next question for you, Susie. In my opinions of and remarks about other AAs, am I implying membership requirements other than a desire to stay sober?
Well, that's an interesting question, Susie, because I think there really are very, I think over the years of staying sober, I've come to find people that have helped me to see that very little, like you guys were even talking about, is required. You know, all I have to do is have a desire not to want to drink. And I think if I can just get down to that basis of our requirement of our third tradition and keep things pretty simple, it's helped me to stop finding fault with other people and finding, and I had in the past, I'd seen things that I thought weren't right. And I think in my own fear and me wanting to do things right and my own stuff, I've learned from, you know, people that are just sound, that do things differently, like you were beginning to talk about, that it's okay. Membership requirements are simple. Just, you know, if you have a desire, you can come. And I just want to be able to work with all different types of people. And over time, I've learned enough about myself and learned to kind of get over things and be a little bit more charitable and a little bit kinder and a little bit more understanding from working with so many people. And I see my own defects so blatant now that I don't want anything to stand in their way again sober.
Yeah, it's a flawed question. So now that I look at it, it says membership requirements other than a desire to stay sober. Well, that's not a membership requirement. What's the tradition say? It doesn't say stay sober.
No, it says a desire to
quit drinking.
That's what I said.
Yeah, you did say that. That's what I'm. Yeah, so a desire to stop drinking.
Yes.
Right. It doesn't say. So we need to get the grapevine to rewrite this question.
Yeah, I agree.
am I implying membership requirements other than a desire to stop drinking? I don't think so. I think, though, that it can be implied sometimes, like a new person come into a group and they might hear, you know, get a sponsor and call your sponsor every day. That's just an example. So they might think that's a requirement. That you might hear somebody say 90 meetings in 90 days, or you got to go to a meeting every day. You know, I do know groups where you got to dress up to attend. Folks where you can't have any, if you're male, you can't have any piercings or visible tattoos or even facial hair. I've seen that. So I think sometimes we can, it may be implied. So I think we just, you know, we got to be careful to, we're here to help alcoholics, and people get here in all variety of ways and all variety of conditions. And, you know, we should just simply offer them, you know, help and healing and the solution out of the book. regardless of what their other problems are. And that's the, I mean, I think that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous is we'll help anybody. As a matter of fact, we've gotten to the point where we'll even start helping non-alcoholics, which is probably not a good thing for the fellowship. Susie, were you going to say something?
I don't think that I've ever implied membership requirements other than a desire to
Stop
stop
drinking.
drinking. But I do know that recently there is a woman who I've sponsored for a while, but I've tried to help her for at least as long as I've been sober. And I know she was coming around before that. And just recently she'd reached out to me, relapsed again. And, there was a period of time where when I was sponsoring her, I mean, she's probably the only person I've been in a screaming match with on the phone about her problems other than alcohol. And it did seem to me at the time like, if she didn't stop doing some of those other things, she was not going to be able to get and stay sober. That was my opinion. I let her know that. So, anyway, she's trying to get sober again for like the millionth time. And that's not a judgment, it's just a fact. And I told her, I said, in the last several years since I sponsored you, I've grown a lot. And I do believe that you can get and stay sober in spite of these other things. And she, of course, is like cleaning it up for me, like, well, I know you just cared and loved about me and wanted to see me do well. And but I do know that it is something that changed in me that I'm able just to say today, I don't know that this necessarily completely applies, but I think that that is practicing a genuine humility for me today of saying, there are all these other things going on, and maybe I have an opinion about whether or not you can stay sober and still do them. History may suggest that you cannot, but like AA does not have an opinion on that. So let's try to work the steps and get through all 12, and you help someone else and see what happens.
That's a great point.
We'll see. I'll check back in with y'all in about a month. That's
See if the humility stays with you.
right.
That's
Do
just an.
I? Here we go. Do I do all I can do to support AA financially?
Yes, absolutely. I do all that I can do financially. I mean, I was always taught to give. My first experience, my sponsor, I was smoking a cigarette outside a home group, and I was probably about, I don't know, probably I had a part-time job. I worked catering twice a week, but I had some first income coming in, and I was smoking, and she grabbed my cigarette and kindly put it out for me and told me if I couldn't give at the meeting, I probably, unless I couldn't do both smoke and give, that I probably didn't need to be smoking as much. She didn't say quit, she said as much. And she taught me a powerful lesson that I needed to learn how to give. And giving, she didn't say an amount. She was never a very specific person, like, I need you to give $1 at the basket every week, you're making money. And she just wanted me to be able to come from within what I was receiving and give something and remember to always give. And she was a good teacher, and I'm grateful for that. It may seem like a silly experience, but at the time, it spoke volumes to me that I had money to smoke and I had money to do other things. But I really thought that you guys in AA had all the money because y'all had your life together and you could take care of AA for me till I get a little bit better situated.
Yeah. This might be one where for me it was maybe an implied membership requirement because I was told to put money in the basket. I'm like, no, it was a good, I mean, looking back on it, it was a good thing, but it was like it wasn't an option. It was like put money in the basket.
You do,
And
yeah.
yeah, and so I mean I always have and I'm careful to not watch who is putting money and who's not putting money. I used to do that. And I'll tell you a funny quick story though. I don't know how long I was sober, probably 9 months. And I started making a little bit of money. Now I had a bunch of financial amends to make, and I was making them as best as I could. And I had some payment plans set up on some stuff and stuff like that. Well, I had a little extra money and I wanted this watch bad. And I went, and it was like a $300 watch in 1989. I mean, it'd be like spending a couple thousand today on a watch. And 3 days after buying it, I lost it. And I had convinced myself that that was a sign from God that I shouldn't have spent that money that really belonged to other people on buying a watch. And I doubled up on my financial mends after that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's a part two,
Oh, sorry.
Susie. Well,
Go ahead.
I just realized what these questions are doing. So the tradition 12 is kind of a wrap up of the previous 11 traditions.
Yes.
So it's kind of reviewing common welfare, tradition one, membership requirement, tradition
Beautiful.
three, self-support, tradition seven. And I guess that if we're practicing those, then we're doing tradition 12.
Exactly. There you
I
go.
got it. I'm a little slow, team.
Okay, Susie, this is a part two to Do I Do All I Can to Support AA Financially? When is the last time I anonymously gave away a Grapevine subscription?
Oh my God.
That's impressive. I actually gave somebody the money to get the subscription not even a month ago because they wanted it.
Nice.
But I didn't, I don't normally do that. It's not something, I hate to admit it. To be honest, Susie, I don't normally buy it a lot for other people, but I knew a woman that wanted one. I had been bringing her some of them at a shelter nearby, and I gave her the money for the subscription.
Very cool. What about you, Jay Wayne?
Nice. Oh, a week or two ago, I've given away Grapevine subscriptions quite often over the last several years. I even do the renewals for some people, not for everybody. But yeah, it was another one, somebody sent me one, so I kind of passed that on. So that answers that question. Now, personally, I have had love and hate relationships with the Grapevine, as many AA members have. But yeah, I continue to support it and give away subscriptions. Matter of fact, my mom, a non-alcoholic, she was one of the biggest readers of the Grapevine. I sent her a subscription probably 30 years ago, and she kept renewing it, and she read every copy of at least for the last 30 years before she passed away.
That's wonderful. That's awesome. I used to, before, when I had just a few years sober, I used to set them around when I lived with a family member on the coffee table, just thinking maybe she ought to read it. And she did at times, but I don't think she was picking up what I was putting down, if you know what I mean.
Now, what about the principles before personalities part in the tradition?
You throwing that at me? Yeah.
Yeah, Susie, tell us what you think about that.
What I was kind of trying to allude to when we were talking about implied membership and that kind of stuff is I think over time, I think it's a, I think 12 is, like you said, it's an ongoing practice of all of the principles in the traditions. But that before personality thing, in the, I always thought it was like if somebody gets really pissed off at you at an AA meeting, then you're supposed to stay calm and act right. I always thought that's what that meant. Do you know what I mean? And I've come to find over time, and people that have been probably good enough to see some of my, blatant mistakes in sobriety, they've been able to point out to me it's not just, behaving on the spot, looking like you're tolerant. It's about living a way of life that isn't offensive, and you're where you're not so highly offended by other people's behavior, and you can just be calm, and you can try to bring unity back to a situation or a person, and applying principle for me, like I think humility really it's about bringing some kind of charity or kindness toward people, trying to get people to see just calmly the way they are is okay, that you don't have to like. quarantine people into like being something they aren't, or trying, like we talked about that implied stuff, just letting people be who they are. I mean, I have a great sponsor right now, and he's always showed me how to just be calm and be present and to listen. And I think listening has been the greatest help in practicing 12 for me, because I used to jump at saying something because I not only did I think I knew, and sometimes I did know, but I think in calmly listening to people and acknowledging what their point of view is and letting them be who they are, and then just responding in a kind way or sometimes not responding, is very useful. And just, you know, just being present, not walking away, not overreacting, and not taking someone's inventory. It's huge.
Yeah. I was sober years before I realized that, I know y'all have heard this before, but that it was principles before my personality. I always thought that I was placing principles before your personality.
Yes.
And I've realized that that's kind of playing God, that there's really nothing wrong with y'all's personality. There actually probably is, but I can't do anything about it.
Well, not with me and Susie, but other people probably.
Yeah, you two are perfect. That my personality is what gets in the way, and that, you know, that is what I, the only thing that I can control. And so I've got to place principles before my personality, and that means laying aside what I think is best, and, you know, trying to make sure that everybody knows what my experience is. And I always relate it back to the story and the analogy before at the third step in the big book, where the actor's trying to be the director. And a lot of times I'll do that in my mind. Right? And why can't he just do this? Or why can't he just say that? Or why can't they see that if they would just listen to me on this situation, things would be. And that's the type of attitude and stuff that I've got to avoid. And I got to bring God into that. I got to bring those principles into that stuff and just, you know, stay humble and sometimes stay quiet, let people have their own experience and not think that I've got to govern everything.
Well, I feel like I was in my quiet era for many years. And
you're out of that?
Maybe I'm out of that. So I'm probably just learning how to put principles before personalities. But I do know that it's been shown to me, and it's been shown to me recently, you know, where there are people that an issue has been going on kind of in the background, and that person is still willing to reach out to me and say, hey, this woman is looking for you, or, you know, here's someone that you may be able to help. Here's someone I met at a men's meeting, and I know that you're a solid AA member, to turn her to. So I think when I have experiences like that from other people that I may not like all the time in AA, but that I can respect, I respect their sobriety. Maybe it's their length of sobriety. Maybe it's kind of what I've seen from them, but I may not entirely like them when they show me the principles before personalities. It's like I can better understand it. And that's typically, I don't know, the way that I've always lived my sobriety is I can know any of this. I can know the information. I can logically or through reading or knowledge be like, oh yeah, that makes complete sense. But until I have an experience where either I know I'm practicing this tradition or someone else, it's very obvious that they are. I feel like I'm just now kind of really starting to understand what that means.
Yeah. Susie, what would be your final, Susie D, what would be your final kind of comments or wrap up on Tradition 12?
You know, I think probably the one, what I was thinking about is just the gratitude and thankfulness that it reminds me that when I do, you know, when I do act on principle and I can stay calm, or I can let somebody have their own experience. I think that is so powerful, where I can step back and not have to think I know or why I can't manage when you were talking about that. When I can do those things, you know, I'm much closer to God when I'm not interfering with other people in their life. It's one thing to provide support and love and experience, but sometimes I've done more than I should have. And I think that Tradition 12 helps me to be reminded I've got this God that I can not only go to about my conduct, but I can also go to this God about people that I care for and I'm concerned about. And I can leave it with God. I don't have to tell everyone every thought that I have or everything that might be good for them, you know, and that's really helped a lot. And, you know, my actions, I try to, you know, a long time ago, a woman told me, don't write your gratitude, act your thankfulness. And, you know, that's what I want to do, is be reminded that all things come in and through God. And it's a blessing to be here. It's a blessing to be useful to somebody else, finally, after all the years of taking. I'm so utterly grateful that I can be somewhat useful, and I try not to get in the way of being useful to someone else. And I don't want to be, you know, the butt of somebody's resentment. It's just, life is way too short. So I think this helps me to really truly practice, like, a, you know, a little bit of humility. And it's an ongoing practice of respecting anonymity of others and other members, and trying to just live within the guidelines of what we've been given. And it's time, and it's practice, and it's not always done well. It's a little bit messy. That's it.
Thanks. Shank, I think we'll end it right there. I don't know much to
add. Not much more that could be said.
That was powerful. Thank you.
Well,
we'll move on to meeting shrapnel.
All right. Meeting shrapnel, which is our segment of lore, myth, and sayings frequently heard in AA. Our first meeting shrapnel we have today is Yay God.
Yay, God. Yeah.
What do you think?
I actually thought about this line because I was so grateful that I had been given the little list of what y'all were going to talk about. And I thought, I know a lady that used to always say that. And she was a lovely person. She sponsored probably half of Durham and part of Chapel Hill and all over the heck. And, you know, she did a lot of really good work here. And she used to always say, Yay, God. And she was from the Ohio area. So that might have been big back in Ohio. Now, personally, in my sobriety, I've never had any sponsor or anybody ever say that. I don't find it offensive. As a matter of fact, I believe all things come in and through God. I just do. So Yay God is fine with me.
What do you think, Jay Wayne?
Well, it's not one that you hear a lot. But I do hear people say it, and I'm familiar with it. I know some people that overuse it, and which irritates me. And I shouldn't say it irritates me, but they just throw it out, right? It should be used on, I think, very specific and powerful occasions. But you never see them throw it out when something bad happens or when things don't go their way. So that would be a criteria for me to not. I wouldn't use it. But I mean, if you're only saying that for good stuff, then I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't use it. You ever used it, Shank?
I don't know that I've used this one, but when you said that, it made me think of "This too shall pass," and people say it about bad things, but then also good things. That has been done to me, where I'm just like, I'm on a roll, everything's amazing, work is good, you know, everything's good. And someone has said to me, like, well, this too shall pass. So that's a good point about Yay God. I don't remember, until I put it on this list, having ever seen or heard someone use it. But then once I put it on this list, I did see and hear it several times.
It's weird how that happens, isn't it?
It is.
This is a popular one on social media right now. People
it
are using
is, it. Yeah.
Really? Oh, I don't.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, so, do you want to keep it or scrap it, Susie?
It doesn't offend me or bother me in the least. I'm not going to say it, so I'd scrap it because I don't say it.
All right.
All right. I'm scrapping Jerry? It.
It's out of here. It's scrapped. Scrapped. All right. Meeting shrapnel number two is put the hearse in reverse.
Oh my God, did I love that? I thought that was so cool. But you know what? I knew nothing about it because I've never heard it anywhere. So I did a little dig. You'd be proud of me. I Googled it and I found out that a guy named Billy Cole wrote a very famous song in 1971, country western, with that line in it. And I thought that was so impressive. So I just wanted to share that with you. So if that's a popular thing y'all say, I don't know anything about it, but I guess AA could, in fact, if you work the steps, live a principled life, it may keep you alive longer than, you know, total alcoholism, of course, but I really don't get it.
Did you listen to the song?
I did. It was so funny. Oh my God. It was great. You got to listen to it. You can hear Google it. You'll hear it. It's Billy Cole. Yeah.
Billy Cole. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, 1971. And that's one of the lyrics. Yeah.
That's
funny. Well, that makes more sense to me now because the person I originally heard it from seems like would be a country western fan from around that generation. So that makes complete sense to me now. This is full circle.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the very first time I heard it, let me back up. The very first time I remember hearing it was when we recorded the trailer for the podcast. Shank, you used it on the podcast, and I swear I've never heard it before. Now, since then, I've heard three or four different people use it. So I guess it's basically saying, "Hey, you're headed for death. You're headed for destruction.
Yeah.
If you keep going the route you're on, and you're going to end up in the ground in the hearse.
Yeah.
So put that destruction in reverse."
Love it.
That's great.
Now, I'm glad to hear that it came from a song. I would have said it came straight from an NA member, but that's probably not accurate. Now, Billy Cole did it.
Yeah.
I wonder if Billy Cole was in NA.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe he was. You never know. You know, and with the, you know, that NA anonymity, we may never find out. So
there you go.
I love it.
You want to keep it or scrap it? See?
I'm going to use it probably. So to me, it's not important. I'd scrap it.
What do you think, Jerry?
Oh, I love it. I'm keeping it. I know that's going to shock people, but I just.
Well, now that I know that it is a, I mean, country western, Billy Cole. I mean, I think I'm going to have to keep it. I don't know. Should this be contingent on listening to the song?
That might be a good idea. Maybe, it'll grow on you. But I will just never say it. So I don't care. Y'all can scrap it or keep it, but I'm not going to use it.
I probably won't use it either. But
I'm keeping it.
After we listen to the song, I may start using it.
Yeah.
Well, let us later on the next podcast when you do the review, let us know what you found out.
Beautiful. We're going to do that.
We'll do that.
All
so,
right.
So, Shank, are we keeping it or are we tabling it until we listen to the song?
We're tabling it until episode 13.
No.
Got it. Okay.
All right.
What's next?
The third meeting shrapnel is I would lie when the truth would suffice.
Shh.
I've heard it, but it has no bearing on anything I know. Not anything I lived before or after sobriety. No. Scrap it.
What do you think, Jerry?
Susie went in quick on the scrap.
She did. I like it.
Yeah.
That was almost a super scrap.
Almost. That's fine. I would lie when the truth would suffice. You know what? If I look back, it's probably an accurate statement. I think it implies that, hey, no matter what, the truth, the lies just come out of your mouth. And that even when it would be easier to tell the truth, you tell a lie. But it's not anything that I would say. I know where it came from. I love the guy, but it's not a, I would, yeah, I don't know.
I for sure have said this before.
You have?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't pinpoint a time, but this just sounds accurate to me. It sounds like something I would want to say in a talk probably about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And just letting you know how much of a liar I was when I arrived at Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right. Well, why don't we just say we were dishonest?
Right.
Because that doesn't sound as good. Well, I mean, come on, y'all. Come on.
Just say you were a liar.
Yeah.
That doesn't have the ring to it. I mean, I would lie when the truth would suffice. Sounds good.
Well, it's kind of a cool statement, I guess.
That's right.
It is.
You know, kind of cool and slick. You know, like, it's important. You know, we all come from a place of being hip, slick, and cool for a while. Absolutely. I know I was. But no, I don't like it.
Are you going to keep it or scrap it, Jerry?
Oh, I'm scrapping it.
All right, it's out of here. It's scrapped.
Thank you.
Oh, that's right. Susie already super scrapped it, didn't she? Or she, yep. She went in hard. Susie, we appreciate you being with us today.
It's been really fun, you guys. Thank you, Susie. Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it. It's been good.
If you would like to hear more from our guest, Susie, she was on season 2, episode 5. So you can go back in the
archives
in the deck there and listen to that one if you want to hear more.
It's an awesome episode. Mm-hmm. One of the most downloaded episodes we have, I think.
Sure is.
That's not being very humble, is it? I guess if somebody else says it, it's okay. You just can't say it.
That's right. It's just a fact.
Well, I'm just grateful y'all asked me. Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun, really.
Yes, we appreciate your insight and your experience. If you're out there, stay tuned next week for the season 5 wrap up. And remember to be free.
Freedom.
Thanks for listening. If you have a comment, suggestion, or just need help, you can email Shank and Wayne at freedom@alcoholicsalive.com. Remember, we're recovered members of Alcoholics Anonymous, but we do not speak for Alcoholics Anonymous, nor do we get paid. Join us next week for another great episode.